Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
And welcome back to Overnight America. Oh boy, our guest is not answering right now. And I was watching WWE, which was a mistake because they're at Enterprise Center right now. And the wrestlers went out section 101, 102. They walked all the way up from the ring up to the concourse, section 101, 102. And they're all wrestling in the concourse right now. So exciting. All right, let me see if I can get a backup number real quick because this happens sometimes with live radio. Okay, because I want to be able to bring our guest. Tisha Powell is a legal analyst and author of the book called Trump Must Win, Discover the Dark Days Americans Will Face If Trump Isn't Reelected in 2020. So we're going to keep trying to call her, and hopefully we'll be able to get her on the line here momentarily. Because I had some thoughts about what happened over the weekend. I also had some thoughts about how we're going to be able to handle American discourse anymore because, okay, let me see if I can get this one more time. I feel bad because this microphone arm keeps falling down. It's very, very interesting. Okay, see if we can get this to work. And then if there's a backup number, I wonder where she is right now. That's a shame. I was really looking forward to talking to her tonight. One of the things I heard Megan Lynch bring up on the news, we got that feasibility study when it comes to the tube, the giant tube between St. Louis and Kansas City. We'll talk about that. You know who we're going to have in studio next segment, or actually in about a half hour from now, is a local author by the name of Cameron Collins. He is the co-author of Scenes of Historic Wonder, St. Louis, and looks at some really cool historic photos, some of which I don't think have ever been published, so it's pretty exciting to see that. See, I can't get this to work right now, unfortunately. Wonder why it keeps doing this. Well, you know what we could do? I guess we could take an early break and maybe I can try to hop on and maybe I got it saved on my other computer somewhere here. But when we book this, sometimes we find that it's the only number I have for them. Make sure this is the right number you have. Is this the number you've been calling? Today's Monday, October 28th, right? No. Yeah. Is that the same number? Or did I type it in wrong?
No.
That's a different number?
Yeah.
Oh, no. I think I typed it in. Okay. Producer Carl's going to go check that over there. That's a little bit embarrassing. That's a different number? Okay. I might have typed it in wrong when I put it in the rundown. Oh, it is the same number? Okay. Maybe I didn't type it in wrong. We'll try one more time. If not, we'll have to maybe reschedule with her sometime. Or who knows, maybe Cameron Collins is in the car driving in right now listening to Overnight America, and he's thinking, what am I getting myself into? This rinky-dink radio program at night. How in the world does KMOX justify having this guy on the late-night radio? She's not answering. That's okay. We can move on. But you know what? Today in history in the city of St. Louis was that final piece was set at the top of the arch. I'm sure many people have memories watching that on television, or maybe some of you were close enough to actually witness as the crane set that final piece of the arch down. You know how exact they had to be? For something like, I don't want to make light of what happened at that Hard Rock Cafe Casino building down, and I think it was Louisiana. And you saw that, you know, there were some people that ended up dying based on the collapse of that building. But even the weeks leading up to it, there were structural engineers and construction workers that were looking at some of the ways that the steel was bending, and they're saying this is terrible. That we got to get out of this. And for some reason, they were still working on it, and they weren't listening to some of the pleas, some of the warnings on this. And I think some people felt the same thing was going to happen to the St. Louis Arch, that they were going to get up there and they're going to try to put this capstone, the very top part of the arch in there, and that it wasn't going to fit, something wasn't going to work, the two sides weren't going to line up properly, but it was like a glove, wasn't it? And you know what I found out too as part of that article you can find at KMOX.com? they, as part of their feasibility study, just like we did the Hyperloop feasibility study, when they were studying what's it going to take to put in this, and let's put the game plan together for this arch, they actually accounted for a certain amount of deaths of the workers. And they just assumed that by building a structure like this monument that was going to go up, that there were going to be some casualties. They thought it was going to be in the double digit. They thought about a dozen people would die trying to build this arch. Does that happen with all buildings when they build something like that? Do they just assume that there's going to be some deaths associated with building it? Whenever they build anything, a giant skyscraper, do they just think to themselves, well, you know what? Well, we're just going to have to assume about 12 people will die building this. I've never heard that before. As it turns out, you know how many people died building the arch? Zero. Zero people died building the arch. It's kind of good news, isn't it? This is Overnight America, KMOX. Welcome back to Overnight America. Looks like we can't get a hold of our guest, Tisha Powell. So that's a shame. I was really looking forward to talking to her. We do have a guest that's going to be coming into studio with us here soon. Cameron Collins is the author, at least co-author, of Scenes of Historic Wonder, looking at some of those great moments in St. Louis, a photographic fun time to go back into memory lane. Last week when I was off, I spent some time at the History Museum in Forest Park. It's awesome. I always spend time on the bottom floor, so my son goes into the kids section and plays with my wife goes in there with him, and they play together, and sometimes I'll go and check something else out. A lot of the other exhibits are a little too boring or maybe not good for children, so you have the Pulitzer exhibit that's open right now, not suited for children. There's some very graphic and serious images and messages that are associated with those photos, so I wouldn't take a five-year-old in there. But I'll go and check that out. I never, ever went to the second floor. I always skipped the second floor. I don't know why I skipped the second floor. They have a couple of different exhibits. St. Louis, I think it was prior to 1904 and then after 1904. I think there's a cutoff point, so you can kind of see what it was like to live in St. Louis. Here's some things that people would wear. Here's what the houses would look like. Here's some of the tools. Here's some of this. Here's some of that. It is awesome, awesome, awesome. And I'm so glad I went up there. I'm going to have to spend more time. But my dad, who grew up in St. Louis, had to go up there, and he went down, tripped down memory lane. He thought it was the greatest thing ever. That's kind of what this book feels like to me. So I'm looking forward to talking to Cameron about that here in about 10 minutes or so from now, 15 minutes from now. I saw this story online, and people have been posting food stories like crazy. You notice how some people say, global warming and bacon, so you must... go out there and subscribe to every way of thought of the internet in order to be a now global warming climate change activist in order to save bacon, because you love bacon, don't you? Well, then all the other articles come out and they say, well, actually, we have the largest stockpile of bacon we've ever had. Who has the stockpile of bacon? Why don't I have a stockpile of bacon? I should buy a freezer, put it in the basement, and stockpile my own bacon. You have the survivalists out there that are very serious about this sort of thing. They will go and they'll buy cans of whatever, and they'll have something for a shelf life of 20 years, and they'll have bottles of water stacked from the floor to the top of their bunker. Why don't they save bacon? We need to make sure we put our priorities straight. Well, let's go to China, because there is a pretty big shortage of pork in China right now. Bacon and anything that comes from a pig. And this was the headline in China. China's pork shortage puts dog and rabbit back on the menu. I know that North Korea's got a problem with the dogs, and South Korea. We know that when the Olympians went over to compete in South Korea this last Olympics, they were shocked to learn that they eat dog there, and that in the windows hanging up are dogs. And then you saw that some of them would grab stray dogs and do everything they can to take it back to the United States because they want to save that dog's life. So let's look, too, at the way China now has to find ways to survive. In rural areas of China, their most popular meat is pork, nowhere to be seen. They have actual shortages of this right now. If you go to the supermarket, you're not going to find it. If you can't find it, it's going to be a lot more expensive than you're used to it. And you're not going to be able to afford it if you're in a poor area. So if you're primarily looking for something to eat, let me give you an example of what a waiter would say. You would sit down at a restaurant. You would be in some rural area of China. And you look at the menu and say, "Ooh, okay, pork, that sounds good." You'd point it out and there it is. And then they would say, "Ooh, I'm sorry, we're out of pork. If you really want to eat meat, have you considered our dog? It's delicious. Have you considered our dog? It's delicious." Wow. So let's be clear here. I also found out the average salary of someone in China, if you want to translate that to U.S. dollars, $353 a month is what an average person in China makes. Very, very poor area. So when the prices of pork go up and you can't afford it, you can totally understand why something like that would happen. You know what else was out there? I saw another interesting pop culture website talk about Felicity Huffman getting out of prison now. Did you forget that she was in prison with the whole college admissions scandal? I think she tried to play it right. She tried to say, "Well, we could take this, or I can take this plea bargain. I'll go into a cushy prison, and then I'll be out before you know it." Apparently, her release date was set for Sunday, but this was last week, and they had some way that you could legally maneuver around that since it was on the weekend, and if they weren't a threat, they would let them out a couple of days early before the weekend because, you know, short-staffed or they're not used to doing processing or whatever it is on the weekend. So she gets out Friday. The paparazzi's there to take photos. I don't know if she feels like this is at least I did my time and got it done. She spent a lot less money when it came to the college admission scandals than the Lori Loughlins of the world who's going to fight this sort of thing, spent a ton of money in court. I wonder if they're going to be out for blood, if they're going to try to push her in there for as much as they can possibly put her in there for. I wonder. So there were some photos of her leaving. Her husband was there to pick her up. Meanwhile, Lori Loughlin and her husband, Mozumo, are still awaiting their court date as part of the college cheating scandal. Maybe they'll, at this point, feel like the heat is off of it. And maybe, at this point, what they're doing is basically thinking to themselves, people aren't as passionate about it anymore. Who cares? Let's just let this thing go. What a weird time to be alive, isn't it? Here's a couple of stories I want to get to. There is Kanye West. By the way, he's on absolute fire right now. I have a couple of clips from Kanye. He is just going out there and he is not taking anything for granted. He is taking the time to explain the things he believes and how tired he is of other people trying to put expressions and thoughts into his own mind to try to, as almost if he's a pass-through, as in he has to think a certain way because of the color of his skin. Now, he has been just absolutely out there swinging, making sure people know the most important thing you need to do as an individual is be an individual. Think for yourself. Don't take these things lightly. I like that sort of message from Kanye. So we're going to talk about that later in the show, too. We're going to talk about the Hyperloop, which is an entirely giant waste of money. It's almost like the trolley. If you're Joe Edwards and you're thinking, "Well, wait a minute, hold on. The trolley and the Hyperloop, we're in the same boat with each other. Yeah, we need each other to succeed. Oh, yeah, we need to do this, we need to do that." You know, if you're going to spend the hundreds of millions of dollars to put a little test run up, you can afford, if we're talking about hundreds of millions, you can afford a little 400,000 here, 700,000 there. Throw a little my way. I wonder if they're going to try to anchor on to that and try to grab some of this money if they actually decide to do it. I think this Hyperloop is such a stupid idea. How about you let another state waste their money on it? Missouri, we have so many other infrastructure issues. We have our roads that are deteriorating. We have our bridges that need some very important upgrades. Think about what happened in Flint, Michigan when it came to the pipes. We have you look here even in the city of St. Louis, we have like these water mains that are whittled from, we have wood water pipes in St. Louis, no joke. There's still wood water pipes. And you look at the issues that we have with sewage and trying to make sure we're not spilling too much over into the Missouri or Mississippi River. We got some problems. If you want to spend some money, how about you earmark those hundreds of millions towards that? And how about we just completely forget about spending it on a Hyperloop that A, no one's going to use, and B, will never get completed, and C, will never make it between here and Kansas City because we're going to run out of money ahead of time. And do we have to go down the laundry list of reasons why this is a bad idea? Don't spend money on it, please. If you are a giant multi-trillion-dollar company like Virgin Mobile or Galactic or whoever makes these things, and they want to privately put it in on their own dime in the city, in the counties associated between here and Kansas City, decide, okay, we could allow them to build it on the government land in between Interstate 70. We'll let them do that without charging them for the land, but they're going to have to pay to put it in. I'm all for that. I'm okay with that. Let them waste their money. So we're going to talk about that later, too, and I want to get your calls on it. Also, the hearing today began on the fate of Missouri's lone abortion clinic. I also want to talk about the college athletes getting paid, perhaps. They want to look at putting a similar plan in Illinois like they did in California. So much to get to on the show. We're going to bring in our special guest, Cameron Collins, next, who's a co-author of Scenes of Historic Wonder, and I can't wait to talk St. Louis with him coming up on Overnight America KMOX. Overnight America in St. Louis, Missouri. Scenes of Historic Wonder, St. Louis. One of the co-authors joining us in studio is Cameron Collins. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
I think it's great that you're in person. I'm so glad you decided to come in. You also brought a copy of your book. This is a hardcover book if I've ever seen one. This is a heavy-duty book.
It is. It's a big coffee table book, heavy.
It's great.
Yeah.
Do they sell this at the History Museum?
I'm sure they do. They've got to have it in stock, but pretty much anywhere you can buy books, you can find it.
What are your favorite local bookstores in town?
I do all the independents.
Yeah.
Nuff Bank and Novel Neighbor.
Mm-hmm. My wife loves Novel Neighbor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But also the museums, just like you said, the Campbell House Museum right up the street.
Mm-hmm.
Is where actually I volunteer there, so that's where I buy most of my books.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
What I notice about the History Museum is they have an awesome little gift shop, and things aren't like crazy priced there.
No.
You just assume they're going to be because it's inside of like a History Museum, but they're actually very reasonable. So you go in there and you're like, oh, I don't feel bad buying things here. Sometimes you go into places like you go to a game or you go somewhere and it's like $10 for a drink and $15 for a hot dog. And you're thinking, oh boy, I can only afford one. Well, you go into like a place where that's actually reasonable. You end up spending more, I think. It works in the long run. You have so many great photos in this.
Yeah, and actually, we couldn't have done it without the Missouri History Museum.
Yeah.
And because many of the photos come from their collection, and they are so generous about it. And, of course, as I mentioned, my co-author works for the Missouri History Museum, Jamie Barassa. And sorry she can't be here tonight, but she is a force, and couldn't have done this book without her.
Awesome. So what do you cover in Scenes of Historic Wonder, St. Louis?
You know, I'm so glad you asked that. Like, I'm so excited about this book because I've always been a fan of St. Louis history.
Mm-hmm.
I think St. Louis is one of the most historically significant cities in the United States. And I'm not from St. Louis, so I'd love to say that.
Where are you from?
Upstate New York.
Okay. What makes St. Louis so historic to you?
It's got everything. Think of the major conflicts in American history, from the Civil War to the American Revolution to its industry, beer, baseball, shoes, cholera, tornadoes, floods. It touches everything, and very few cities can say that in America.
The architecture here is beautiful.
It is. The brick.
The brick is amazing.
Which is featured in the book.
Yeah.
So really what we're showing in this book, though, is kind of like the offbeat, you know, images from St. Louis history that are a little off the beaten path. You know, there's a lot of photographs, historic photographs out there that everybody knows, you know, that everybody has seen photos of the arch and there's, you know, famous stuff. But what we went and did is found photographs of great history and stories from St. Louis that kind of flew under the radar for the last 150 years.
Wow. It's hard to believe. Well, no, it's not hard to believe that there's great stories that have flown under the radar. You know, the weird thing about history is there's so much that's forgotten that's so interesting.
Yeah.
And you find that you recycle the same stories over and over, and people sit there and go, oh, that's awesome. I love that. There is so much more to discover. You think about the process that people go through to try to digitize some of the old documents. There's things that have been sitting in boxes for 100 years that if you were to just open it up, you'd probably make a mind-boggling discovery. It's just waiting there for someone to look at.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of that going on. So tell me some of the things you discovered when you were doing this book.
Yeah, you know, my favorite is a story. I'm going to bring up the Campbell House right down the street. And they, like, for example, there's a photo we use in the book taken in 1885.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very rare for historic homes to have photographs of the interior of their house taken at that time. Mm-hmm. The Campbell House is lucky to have 60 of them. They have a full album.
Wow.
And what's remarkable about that is
They had a good realtor when they were trying to sell it. They had all kinds of photos.
Yeah, they lost those photos, though. They were discovered in a dumpster in 1973.
Wow.
The museum had no idea that they existed. And they were, you know, placed in the hands of the director at that time. And it was just like a remarkable discovery.
That is a remarkable discovery.
But even other stuff, like we have a photo in there that I love of... you know, River de Pere is a waterway in St. Louis mm-hmm. that often gets, you know, a little bit mocked in St. Louis, you know, the River de Pew. but, you know, some people may not know that the River de Pere once flowed through Forest Park.
Huh.
And to prepare for the World's Fair, they had to dig a tunnel.
Oh, yeah.
And divert the river under Forest Park. And so we have a photo in the book of this massive tunnel.
The idea of them during the World's Fair, and there's a great exhibit at the History Museum showing some of the photos of the preparations and everything that went into it. That was a massive undertaking.
Yeah.
It's hard to imagine putting anything like that together anymore, because most of our special events, if it's a week long, it seems like it's a long event.
Mm-hmm.
Anymore, you try to fit everything into a weekend. Imagine trying to spread it out over a couple of years.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, building all the structures. You're building a city on itself in Forest Park for something like that.
Yeah, we have a whole section on the World's Fair in there. Yeah. Everything from clearing the trees to the baby incubator exhibit. And,
oh, wow.
Yeah, and then another favorite is there was a popular attraction on the Pike where elephants, it was called Shoot to Shoots, where elephants slid down a giant slide into a pool. So, I mean, it's just great stuff like that.
Elephant slide.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that sounds like fun. I also like when you can get that folklore out there where people try to guess if the Ferris wheel's buried under the ground.
Yep.
You know, people have their own little stories and things that have been traveled through the years, and you don't know if exactly they're true or not. You know, what's really good is Johnny Rabbit. Ron Ells does a great job with his presentations talking about those things. Do you know him at all?
I do, yeah. I have not met him personally, but I know of him. So,
yeah. Oh, you would love him. He puts on those presentations about once a month at the History Museum.
Oh, yeah.
World's only... Was it the bowling pin car? What in the world is this?
Yeah.
National Bowling Hall of Fame and Museum in St. Louis. I haven't visited that.
It's gone now.
Is that the one that shared it with the Cardinals?
Yeah, yeah. And now I believe it's in Dallas, but it moved.
Oh, so, that's interesting.
Yeah.
That's weird. You think the Cardinals would share with that? I look at all of these classic photographs. How hard is it to get the rights to use these things for a book?
It is... incredibly difficult.
Yeah.
Fortunately, though, many of them came from, as I mentioned, the Missouri History Museum, but also other, you know, sources and people that we reached out to that helped us out. But yeah, that's definitely a big thing with books like this, is you've got to have not just permission to use these photographs, but you got to have an image of quality size that can print. So... but then, of course, we're lucky that some of them are in public domain now.
Mm-hmm.
But there's one, there's a few photos in there that I got from a gentleman who owns an antique shop down in South St. Louis. And I went down there and he found these photographs at a, basically he was just one of those guys who bought them at a garage sale.
Yeah.
And they're a bunch of glass plate negatives.
Mm-hmm.
And he went and had them all printed. And so I think we have three of them mm-hmm. in the book. And He's a great guy. He just asked that I give him a couple signed copies of the book.
Isn't that the dream, to go to a garage sale and find a box of photos like that?
Yeah.
Do you go to garage sales looking for that?
I do. Oh, yeah, of course.
I know. Anytime I go to a garage sale, I think this could be it. It's more fun than playing the lottery. You think you're going to find something historic that's been in a basement or an attic somewhere for all those years. You know, today is also a historic day. They put the centerpiece into the arch some many years ago.
Oh, is that today?
That was today. So 54 years ago today, the final piece of the arch was placed. And you were living, not here at the time. You didn't. You said you didn't grow up in St. Louis?
No, but I wasn't born until 71 either.
Oh, okay. So it was
I look older, but.
October 28th, 1965, when the final piece of the monument was put at the very top. You actually have a little piece in the book that talks about the original plan to get to the top of the arch.
Yeah, I was just going to mention that. Yeah.
What was that plan?
It was like a big giant staircase.
Yeah. Look at this thing.
Yeah.
It is a giant staircase. It's a very wide, giant staircase. They were going to have you climb 630 feet to the top.
I guess. Yeah.
Plus, since the way we look at it now, you kind of go underground to get to the top of this thing. So it's probably closer to 650 feet, maybe even more, 670 feet to the top. How many people would be able to do that?
Yeah,
that's a
no
trek
kid.
And a half.
No kid.
And then I don't know how you'd be able to stop people. So they put the tram inside of this thing instead, which is the reason why so many millions of people come and visit this, because they want to take it up to the top. You've been to the top of the arch, haven't you?
Actually, yeah. You know what? And I just went to see the new museum and go to the top just a couple months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And but yeah, it's fantastic. It looks great these days.
The museum's so cool.
It is. As a St. Louis history fan, nut. It took my breath away, and I was there with a friend who wasn't as interested in it, and I kind of said, we can't do this now, because I got to come back on my own and kind of, but the people who put that together, they did a fantastic job.
Yeah. The book's called Scenes of Historic Wonder St. Louis, and one of the co-authors, Cameron Collins, joins us in studio. I know that if you were to work for the Arch, or you're one of the people in PR of the Arch, they're not going to like what I'm about to say.
Uh-oh.
Okay. So whenever we have friends come into town, we take them to the Arch and we go through the museum. Personally speaking, unless they say they really, 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 really want to go to the top, honestly, to me, it's more impressive standing at the bottom looking up than it is standing at the top looking down.
Mm-hmm.
I think the top looking down, you get your 5 minutes and you're bored and you're like, okay, let's go. I got my pictures. I got my selfies. It's kind of cool. It is so much more impressive to be on the base of that thing looking up, put your hand on the arch, and just to be around it. To me, that is a much better feel.
I'm with you.
Yeah. It costs money. You got to, you know, plan ahead of time. You got to get your tickets like the day before to do all this stuff. So whenever we have friends, they all want to see the arch. I just tell them, we're going to go through the museum, we're going to come out, and you're going to look at this thing. It'll be 10 times more impressive from the bottom than it is from the top.
But what about the
controversial
movie?
Controversial take.
You got to see the movie, though.
The movie?
Monument to the Dream.
Oh, yeah, that's
where they got,
right.
You know,
the
like,
pictures and stuff.
And the thing was done.
That's kind of cool.
It is good. I remember when I first came to St. Louis for the first time, a friend of mine was like, the movie is better than the arch.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That movie's pretty cool.
We all actually fell asleep during the movie because we had been out too late the night before. So
maybe I'm thinking of a different movie. I'm thinking of the one they show you while you're in line waiting to go on the tram to the top. This is a different one?
Yeah, you got to go into the theater or whatever. And it was made in like 1962 or whatever.
Where's the theater at in there?
I can't remember, but it's great. It's in black and white, and they have all the footage of like them, you know, spraying the fire hoses because the steel was too...
Oh, yeah.
Expanded, and they had to fit that last piece in, like you mentioned.
Really? They had to warp it in a way to get that last piece in?
Yeah. It was off by like 2 centimeters or something like that.
Wow, it's amazing how 2 centimeters can make that much of a difference.
Yeah.
They're hosing this thing down.
Yeah.
My dad was living here in St. Louis at the time, and he watched it on television. It was like a big deal to watch that because everyone did. It's like you didn't work that day. You didn't go to school or whatever it was. You watched that piece go down. It was a pretty awesome moment.
Yeah.
You actually talk sports in this book, too.
Yeah.
What are some sports things you may have discovered?
Yeah, great. Like, one of my favorites is Eddie Goodell, which is the famous, the little person who took, you know, went to bat for the St. Louis Browns.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and he, you know, you walked on 4 pitches. But the story is even better because Bill Veeck, it was, you know, a big promotion of his to have this guy bat in the game. But he batted in the second game of a doubleheader,
mm-hmm.
But the way Eddie came onto the field was kind of funny. In the first game, he was brought out and popped out of a giant cake. So we have a photo.
This is a professional game.
Yeah, yeah.
He pops out of a cake.
Big cake. And he pops out of the cake, and all the press are like, you know, because Vec had, you know, promoted all this craziness.
Yeah.
And they were like, really? That's it? And so he knew what he was doing, though. And then in the second game, he went up and batted. So, but another great one, I got to tell you, is the St. Louis Motordrome.
Mm-hmm.
100 years ago, there was an arena at South Grand and Merrimack, a circular motorcycle track with a bank of 62 degrees, where these maniacs on motorcycles raced at 80 miles an hour with no brakes. And they literally risked their lives, not just by the threat of being thrown out of the arena, but they were racing on pine boards, and nails could come out of those boards and impale people.
Whew.
Yeah. And so we have a couple photos in there of not only that track, but a couple of guys that raced on it.
Oh my goodness.
And it's just great stuff.
You have a picture of a flatbed semi bringing in a dinosaur, the Tyrannosaurus Rex.
Yeah.
Is this the same dinosaur that's outside of the Science Center right now?
Yeah. Originally, they were in Clayton.
Yeah.
And when they decided to move them to Forest Park, they took them apart, loaded them on a flatbed, and drove them through town.
Really?
Yeah.
You know, I always assumed that was the first exhibit they had inside the Science Center, and then when they replaced it with the animatronic, the dinosaurs, they just took those ones out.
No.
So, no, this actually came from a different location.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's a little known fact. Like, when we go to the Science Center, we always go on that side first, the space side,
mm-hmm.
and then we walk around because my son likes to see the dinosaurs that are out there. It's kind of like a little hidden area. You have to know it's there to go see it.
Yeah.
So instead of going in the doors where they have the space side of the Science Center, you just kind of like follow the pathway around. They have the Blue Angel, and then you keep that going down that pathway, and behind the trees, there's two dinosaurs over there. Last time I was there this summer, there was, I think, a beehive in his mouth. So the dinosaur was like, there's bees coming out of its mouth. Now that's a cool dinosaur.
That is.
You want to get a kid interested in dinosaurs, it's not hard to begin with, but you show him one with bees coming out of his mouth. Can you hold on? I want to bring you back after the break. Scenes of Historic Wonder St. Louis, and author Cameron Collins joins us in studio. Great conversation about some of the great things that he's discovered across St. Louis on Overnight America KMOX. Joining us in studio is our special guest, one of the co-authors of a new book called Scenes of Historic Wonder St. Louis, Cameron Collins. Where can people find the book right now?
It can be found anywhere books are sold, local bookstores, Barnes & Noble. I sell it on my blog.
Oh, cool. What's that?
Distilledhistory.com.
How much does this weigh?
Jeez, 4 pounds, maybe?
No, it's an impressive book.
Yeah.
Whenever you get the illustrations or the photos that are in color like this, it has a special type of paper you need for it.
Yeah.
Nice hardcover book. You talk about the Olympics?
Yeah, and that's a subject dear to my heart. Like, the St. Louis Olympics in 1904 is filled with great stories. And one of the ones that I use in there is a gentleman named George Iser,
mm-hmm.
who was a German. He was an immigrant here to St. Louis, mm-hmm. and he was a gymnast, which was a popular sport among German immigrants. And in one day in the 1904 Olympics, he won 6 gymnastics medals. And that's notable because he did it with one wooden leg.
Wow.
He was hit by a train as a child.
Something else.
Yeah, yeah.
The Olympics, there's some great history to the Olympics in itself. There's a lot of remnants of things that are spread around. Last year, they were talking about putting some monuments down regarding where the Olympics and some of the places. They really should put some markers down, shouldn't they?
Yeah. Like, for example, they do. I've seen some markers for the marathon route.
Yeah.
And that is a whole great story. Like, the guy who won, you know, like, this isn't in the book, but the guy that originally won, like, they found out that he had taken a car ride for most
right,
of it.
Yeah.
The guy that did actually win had taken strychnine along the route, and there was a Cuban fella who ran the race in, like, his dress shoes. There's all sorts of great stories.
Would this have happened in Chicago if they got the Olympics?
That's the thing, is, like, you know, St. Louis had to give it its own little
Of course.
Flair. Yeah.
Here's one, Bobby Darin's dream car, and I'm looking at a picture of this. Is this the car that's at the Transportation Museum?
I don't know where it is, but...
You've been to the Transportation Museum.
I have, yeah.
So they have the main building when you walk in and get your tickets or whatever, then you go up the hill, and they have the one classic car exhibit, and there's one car there that they talk about. It was just so expensive to make. And I'm looking at a picture, and it looks very similar to this one. I was curious if it was the same car. So this is Bobby Darin's dream car. Mm-hmm. What's the story there? Do you know?
That one my co-author wrote. So,
oh, yeah. I see. That's right.
Yeah.
How did you guys divvy up the stories you would look into?
It was great, actually, because the funny thing is this book was supposed to have a different feel to it. It was supposed to be more of a humor book. And my co-author and I kind of convinced the publisher we wanted to go a more historical route. And so that kind of what that did was eliminated a lot of the photos that we had already selected. And then Jamie and I just went nuts finding photos that we thought were going to be sufficient and historical. So,
are there any time capsules we don't know about around St. Louis? Because part of uncovering some of these things, I'm sure there's a bunch buried around here that we long forgotten about.
Yeah, especially with the caves underneath the city, you know? So here's a great story. It's not in this book. It's in my second book, which is about the beer history of St. Louis. But like when they excavated the Green Tree Brewery, which is now where an AB parking lot stood or stands now, they turned it into a parking lot and they found the cave network of the Green Tree Brewery underneath. And they did put a time capsule down in there.
Oh, wow.
In the form of a keg.
Okay.
Very, very appropriate. Yeah.
I remember when they were going to move that statue out of Forest Park, that there, the Confederate statue, that there was a time capsule that was built into that that they forgot about. I don't know if they ever opened it.
I don't
know. They might have. I know there was a big deal about them transporting it because they were going to take it over to Jefferson Barracks, who were going to be able to preserve it that way. And one of the things of them picking up this statue and moving it and the cost of it was they knew that there was a time capsule, but I don't think the people and the politicians knew it was in there. So they were like very sly. They're like, oh yeah, well, don't worry, we'll take care of this, knowing that this really awesome piece of history was inside of it. St. Louis Olympic Stadium. There's so much to talk about in this book.
Yeah.
So can you stick around? Can we go one more segment after
Please
the news?
Do. Yeah, I'd love to be that. Here.
I see that tunnel picture you were talking about. Look at this tunnel. That's impressive. I don't even know how 1920s they had the technology to even make a tunnel like this. It's remarkable. You got to think about the elbow grease that went into all of these different projects that are around the area. So joining us for another segment will be our special guest, co-author of the book called Scenes of Historic Wonder, St. Louis, Cameron Collins. We'll continue our conversation with him. If you have any questions for him, you can text him in to 314-436-7900 or 800-925-1120 is our phone number here at Ryan Recker on Twitter. We'll be right back. It's Overnight America.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.